good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday, October 26th board meeting. I'd like to call the meeting to order. It's 12:30. And it's ready to do a roll call to board members.
Commissioner Sandy?
Here.
Mr. Pepe?
Here.
Mr. Foga?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Here.
Mr. Mitchell?
Here.
Here.
So we have a quorum?
You do.
Thank you. All right. Item number three is our agenda. Alan, you have an amendment you want to make?
Yes, Chair. This is Alan Weiser, Executive Director for ADA. We do have a change. We're requesting to delete item 7F. On the agenda is a duplication of 7A.
Okay. All right. I'll entertain a motion with that amendment, with that deletion of 7F.
I move the agenda as amended.
I'll second.
All right. So it's amended to remove item 7F from the record. Any other deletions, corrections, clarifications? Is there any objection to adopting the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Next is prior minutes for September 14th, 2022.
This is Bill Kendig. I move the prior minutes of September 14th, 2022.
This is Albert. I'll second.
All board members had an opportunity to read the minutes. And does anybody have any corrections, deletions, clarifications on the edits? Is there any objection to adoption of the minutes? Seeing and hearing none, the minutes for September 14th are approved. Brings it item number five, public comments. For those online and in the boardroom, I ask that you limit your public comment to 2 minutes. Please state your full name and if you have an affiliation for the record. With that, Remy, do we have anybody online?
No, Chair.
All right.
If there is anyone, any member on the line that wishes to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
While she's waiting for that, I'll go in the boardroom here. Is anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? I don't see anybody. So, Remy, we have one online?
Sure, we do.
So, go ahead and let him in.
They disconnected here.
It dropped.
They went off? Okay. They didn't hit the 9 for you? Is that what you're telling me?
Not today.
All right. I will close the public comment section right for and go to item number 6 on our agenda is new business. First up, on the A is resolution L22-04, Sun Mountain Development Group, LLC. Alan?
Chair, board, we have before you resolution number L2204, which is a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority regarding purchase by the authority of a participation in Sun Mountain Development Group, LLC. The board may recall that we had a presentation with the Sun Mountain Development Group in July, which was a $3 million participation, effectively a $3 million participation at that point in time. This is an additional participation, which is an aggregating for ADA's portion, $1.2 million. And in total to the group and related parties, we do have an aggregate exposure, assuming that this loan is approved by the board, at $14.5 million. So if this...
I'm sorry, what was the aggregate?
$14.5 million.
All right.
And what I would highlight also to you, Chair, is that we're unaware of any other pre-flights under review at this point. So we have not, we do not have any other pre-flights in place.
From this
development group or the related parties. Okay. And with that highlighted, we do have a specific presentation on the particular part of the development that's under review. I would ask that Tiffany Jansen, our Commercial Finance Director, please go through that presentation.
Welcome, Tiffany.
Good afternoon. Okay, so let's have Randy's going to bring up the PowerPoint so we can actually see the project.
And for the board's information, I will be asking to go into executive session after this presentation, discuss the finances of the tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Julie, can you see the presentation?
Yep. Perfect. Well, again, good afternoon, everyone. So we are speaking today about Sun Mountain Development Group. That is the development located off of East Sun Mountain Avenue. This particular one is Unit F. That is located in Wasilla. We'll go to the next slide, please. Here's the map for the location. And then just the next slide. And this is the front of our building. So today the loan request is Northrim Bank has requested ADA's participation of $1,208,700, which is a 90% participation. That is what we have done before on the previous Sun Mountain development loans as well. Total loan amount is $1,343,000. The Sun Mountain Development Group is comprised of three entities, along with the associate owners, for a total of 13 guarantors. It is long-term financing of the building that you see on the PowerPoint presentation, newly constructed, non-owner-occupied Class D building. It's occupied, as you can see, by New Vision Federal Credit Union. This is a takeout, again, of the construction loan, so it is open and operating at this point. It did have 65 construction jobs, temporary jobs, associated with the development construction. And indirectly, though, it has between 12 and 24, or a total amount of 24 indirect jobs that are employed by New Vision themselves. But because they have created the space for that business, we thought it important to include that again.
How many are going to work there?
24.
At that facility?
Correct.
Yeah. Are these new hires, or are they just moving
from
a different location?
This is a new facility. Yeah.
So they're nowhere up. They're nowhere in the valley.
No. This is a new facility, new for them in the area. There's been some expansion of the credit unions in the area.
Chair, if I may add, the reason why Tiffany's providing a little more information about the jobs and relationship of that is that there isn't any current way for us to actually document the additional jobs that are created basically by businesses occupying commercial space. We're only asked to report on the construction jobs that and the ancillary jobs are related to the actual construction of the facility itself. But we think it's very important that we highlight that if the space wasn't available, people would not be working at New Vision. They would not be working, hired by those companies. They would not be additional jobs in the Wasilla area. So we will continue to report on that ancillary information.
We'll be after we get done with this presentation.
Should I continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Amy, do you have someone trying to get in?
I do, Chair. It looks like I dropped college back.
As soon as Tiffany is done with the with the, her presentation, and we'll go back and open back up with the board's concurrence public comment.
Okay. Just to give some background, Sun Mountain Development Group formed in May 2018. It's the developing holding entity for the Sun Mountain development that is comprised of several different buildings. It's got the Sonic that we've done, the Krispy Kreme, and the Planet Fitness that are all located on site. The collateral is managed by Andrew Ingram, who's also a guarantor. He is employed also as a real estate broker. And I do believe the plan is for him to join us. We'll follow through at the end of the presentation. In October, we did visit the property. The collateral consists, as you can see, of one-story, 3,011 square feet, single-use built-to-suit building. It was constructed between 2021 and then spring of 2022. We will take a deed of trust and assignment of rent in the first lien position to secure the loan. In addition, we'll do an assignment of the lease as well. The project was appraised. Market value is listed at $2,300,000. And it, again, it was just newly constructed, so the remaining estimated economic life of the building is 50 years at this point, so well within all of our markers for regulations. Again, it is 100% non-owner-occupied by New Vision Credit Union on a long-term lease. New Vision has locations across Alaska, Wyoming, Washington, California, and Arizona with over 150,000 members, so a quality tenant there. The projected net operating income for the first year of the proposed debt service is 1.25 based upon the tenant's current long-term lease. So that's, again, within our regulations. And Sun Mountain Development Group is also one of the Mattsu Borough's largest property taxpayers. Currently, they are paying $181,000 in property taxes for the borough. The proposed loan at this point will add another $5,000. The property assessor's office has not yet been out to reassess now that the building is complete. So that will go up for that building as well. As Alan spoke to before the presentation, we have done several other loans for Sun Mountain Development Group and their associated owners. That's listed on page 3 of the public memo. And you can see that the last one that we did in July and August for 2.9 has not yet funded, but that is included in the aggregate. We are expecting to fund that in the next couple of weeks. The proposed note is listed there as well for a total of $14,531,000. We talked about this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again. The Mattsu Borough is experiencing explosive growth right now. Anyone who's driven through the borough can see the amount of construction, and the vacancy rates are historically very low in the area, but they're extremely low right now with very little supply. And with this type of quality build, that's almost non-existent. This has been the first new build in Wasilla in over a decade of this type of development. So I wanted to mention that. We do expect that this will continue to be successful, and the previous properties that we have had participated in the area have been quite successful. One of the other things that we are including in the memo is the portfolio diversification. So you can see where the property falls within our portfolio prior to the proposed loan and then after. So aggregate exposure total will be 4% of the total portfolio. Mattsu region will be 22%. And Class D collateral type is 7%. We did create a repayment industry for this, banking and finance, that did not exist before, because, again, we do base it off of where is the repayment coming from, and that is under 1%. Northrend has approved this loan due to the strong financial support and experience of the developers and the management team and the potential for further new business to expand to the subdivision with the addition of this project. We recommend, since the collateral is in excellent condition, occupied by a quality long-term tenant, and the guarantors have resilient revenue streams with sufficient net worth to support the collateral as well. It also will indirectly support those 24 new jobs. So at this point, I would like to open up for any questions. I don't know if we want to go to the comment yet, but then also let you know that we do have the loan officer for Northrend, Tim Breeden, in the room that can answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Debbie. We'll go back to public comments right now. Board will indulge that. Okay.
Two
or caller who wishes to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Hello, can you all hear me?
We can hear you, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. My name is Arlie Hitchcock, and I am an organizer with Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition. Thank you for making space for me to comment. I was on at 12:30, but for some reason, star 9 didn't work after initially putting myself in the queue. So I needed to call back a couple times to try. So thank you for the space. Ironically, I'm calling in today to comment on public process and transparency with ADA. A few weeks ago, I think it was on September 29th, you all held a press conference in response to Salmon State's very informative report on your finances. And one of our staff tried to enter the meeting to ask them questions and see if they could get some answers and some face time with you all, because that's not necessarily how public comments are structured. We don't get answers in response back, and the public definitely has questions about ADA and what's going on. And that person was denied entrance to this press conference, saying that it was a private press conference only. And when asked why that was, they were told that was like for safety reasons, and so that there was no criticism. Essentially, and I just want to say that I think that that press conference should be open to the public. I think everything that ADA does outside of executive session should be open to the public. And this is an example of ADA continuing to operate behind closed doors to protect yourself from public scrutiny and critique, and this is a time when you all should be very open facing, especially given the light of that report and also the resolution you are going to vote on today with Ken Kastner. Maybe you already did it when I was off the line trying to call in. But yeah, I just wanted to speak on that and hope that ADA works to be more transparent and have better relations with the public, because this was messed up.
Thank you for your comments. Now, for a question, what is
she referring to? She's referring to the press conference or the gathering of some journalists that we had, earlier this month to address the economic report that was put together. We have it on the agenda today about the RFP that we're going to be issuing. Ultimately, we'll have a chance to talk more in detail on that. I'm unaware that there was anyone that was not allowed to be in the event, but certainly that wasn't the intention, at least my understanding of the intention.
Right.
We did just address journalists that had contacted us directly to respond to specific questions from the press event that that group had that we were not made aware of.
All right. We'll close public comment section again and go back to this resolution on development. So, Tiffany, This facility, this building, the seed building, is it? Do we have the? It's a conjunction with another building.
No, it's freestanding. Yes, go ahead, keep going. Go forward, please go forward. You can kind of see around it.
So it's just new vision.
Correct.
All right. And does the land go with it?
Does the land go with? It's on a lot. Yeah, they're all. It's been
so it's an individual lot assigned to this building.
Correct.
It's not leased land.
No, it's assigned to that building. So the.
It's a part of the appraisal. The land is part of the appraisal.
Yeah. So it is. Unit F is the shop. The Sun Mountain Phase 2 is what the legal address is. So yes, there's a plot associated with that, and I can have Tim speak to you if they've done a complete title prelim on that to see how far they are in that.
I just want to make sure that if the land is leased or
no, no, there is no lease land.
Goes with the development.
Correct.
Okay. Northridge did the construction loan on it.
Yes.
And they elected to only take 10% of the long-term financing?
That's correct.
Is there a particular reason for that?
When we have, and again, Tim is in the room, we can ask questions directly if the circumstances have changed. But upon the time of the loan application submission, one of the concerns I know was the Northrend's lending cap for the borrower.
$1.2 million.
For this particular one, but Northrend has an outstanding relationship with the borrower outside of this loan.
Do we have information for that?
We do have information on that. That's always included in the confidential cover as a memo where we do a complete debt service.
And so our total exposure is going to be 14.5?
Correct.
In addition to that, Northrend will be on top of it.
Northrend's values are not included in that 14.5, yes.
Okay. Well, unless there's questions in the public domain, I'll move to entertain a motion for executive session.
This is Bill Kendig. I move that the board enter executive session to discuss confidential business matters related to the loan participation proposed in Resolution L22-04. It is required by law to protect certain borrower information as confidential, and it is required by law to not prejudice the reputation or character of any persons. The executive session is supported by the Open Meetings Act, which allows the board to consider specific confidential matters in the executive session.
This is Albert.
I'll second.
Thank you, Albert. Randy, would you pull the board?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bigelmore?
Yes.
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 Sorry, Remy, I was voting while muted.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. We're in executive session. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine. Out there? Oh, good.
Yeah.
They said we were out.
Chair, are you on the record?
Thank you. I advise that the board did not take any action on the matters discussed while in executive session. And the session was limited to the discussion of protected information related directly to the loan participation proposals in this resolution. They're getting longer, Wendy.
I knew you were going to love it.
Okay. Back to Resolution 2204. Did you say Northrend was here?
Correct. Tim Breeden, the loan officer for Northrend on the note, is here in the room.
You mind coming up? You can visit a little bit with us?
Yeah,
sure. If you're
speaking, you need to press the button.
Welcome, Tim.
Hey. Thank you. I'm Tim Breeden. I'm with Northrend Bank, commercial loan officer out in Wasilla.
All right. How long have you been at the bank, Tim?
Just a little over 3 years.
Prior to that?
Just shy of 15 years at First National.
Okay.
In Anchorage.
And what's your opinion of the economic activity in the valley?
Well, of course, rising interest rates are having an impact on projects and how much we can fund and hitting a little debt constraint. But more or less, the valley continues to see growth, and I anticipate that it might slow down a little bit as a result of those rising interest rates, their effect on houses and house prices and some construction and some of the projects that require borrowers to contribute a little bit more to the project, but I'm still seeing really good things on the horizon.
Okay. Do you see the, so Tiffany mentioned that there may be more opportunities for this developer in the future or whatnot. Do you see that as a positive thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great construction jobs. These are worthwhile projects. It translates to, you know, good long-term retail, restaurant, you know, you name the industry. There's office space, options, opportunities. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Any questions for Northern? Julie?
Nothing from me, thank you.
So, Tim, one final question. So is there a matrix you guys use to understand the dynamics of when the market shifts, peaks, and starts to go down, or what do you use for leads to kind of tell you that as a bank? I mean, we've kind of lived a pretty good life here the last 8 to 10 years with interest rates.
Yeah.
Things are going up, and obviously the valley is still busy. I'm just curious what the bank uses out there for future, looking over the horizon to kind of get an idea.
Well, we have an economist that works for us, and his name's Mark Edwards. He comes out to the valley every once in a while and helps to give presentations. You know, we keep our eye on a lot of the statistics you hear from Neil Fried in terms of, you know, jobs, employment rates. One of the things that we utilize out in Wasilla, at least as it relates to the home builders, is the average days on market and the supply and demand. Of course, that's on houses. We're talking about commercial stuff.
But commercial would probably follow it eventually.
That's right. You know, and we read the appendices on the appraisals that we get, which is usually reused information from the State of Alaska, Trends magazines, and various other cited economic studies. Of course, those appraisals in terms of vacancy and market rates and sales data, that's a lagging indicator, so hard to use that to predict what's going to take place in the future. Obviously, the price of oil has a major impact. These things are probably more applicable to the state level than they are to the Mattsu Valley.
Do you guys trend customer balances?
That's not something I typically look at. I'm guessing that there's somebody at the bank that takes a pretty good, careful look at that.
Assuming trending down.
That's right, yeah. And there's been some of that. There was definitely a peak in balances, primarily as a result of, you know, funding $600 million in PPP loans, and that starts to shrink over time as these companies utilize those funds for either, you know, COVID-related things or, at this point, we're talking about supply chain issues more than anything.
So is there anything the bank can share with Ada without a conflict as far as your information on business segments? Obviously, you're tied at the hip on long-term loans. You know, like for this one?
Yeah.
Is there anything that Tiffany, can you think of, I mean, coming out of the industry to Ada, the tools that they have that we're not privy to that we could tie into as far as information gathering and watching for trends?
So do you have any software that you're running for trends right now? I mean, I think that would be under The Economist.
Yeah, I would be happy to get with Mark and see what kind of additional resources we could provide and share with you. I mean, obviously, you're our partner in a handful of these projects, and we want to keep an eye on it. And there will be more.
Yeah, so I would just, you know, if there's information out there that we can grab and help us, you know, make good business decisions.
And it could be something that's maybe included as part of the memos that you provide to Ada.
Yeah, yeah.
Some background information.
Yeah, next time we submit a complete application, we'll look for some additional applicable economy-related information that we might be able to share with you.
That's all my questions. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Nice to be again.
Nice to be here.
Thank you, Tim.
Further questions from the board for Tiffany or Alan? All right, I'll take a motion.
This is Bill Kindig. I move resolution L22-04, Sun Mountain Development Group, LLC.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Motion's on the floor. Further discussion? Hearing none, Randy, would you call the board, please?
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Kindig?
Yes.
Mr. Sozol?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Beaufort?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Brings us up to item number B in the new business, resolution G22-11, base allowance for housing increase for Fairbanks MHO.
Chair, board members, we have before you resolution number G22-11, the resolution of the Board of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority declaring support for an increase in the base allowance for housing provided by the Department of Defense for all eligible service members stationed to Military Housing Area AK-405, which is Fairbanks, Alaska, directing notification to the Congressional Delegation and the Secretary of Defense. So with this resolution and at the request of the board at a last meeting, we highlighted that ADA staff had prepared and what we shared with the delegation was an analysis of the military housing associations throughout Alaska, really identifying the fact that for Fairbanks, and this is across all of the ranks of the military, the bond that's being utilized and shared with Fairbanks community members and military personnel into the community is actually, in some cases, upwards of 26% lower than the average of the other military housing authorities across Alaska. So this is a declaration and a motion really by this board to support, fairness in the application and payments that are being made to military personnel, particularly given the key military mission that we know is in place in Fairbanks, the homebedding of the two squadrons of F-35s, the homebedding of the KC-135 support aircraft for those squadrons, and all the related military personnel. That's pilots, support staff, maintenance staff, everything related to those military missions. And then obviously, in getting an increase that then equates to an expanded military mission, which was really important within the state of Alaska.
So Alan, maybe I missed what you said. Why is Fairbanks less than everybody else when it's probably the most expensive place to live?
That is a key question, Chair, that we're not able to answer because the data that we share within the report doesn't support that conclusion. And it's unclear to us, and in further discussions ultimately with the military command going through the information, it's unclear how that ultimately has been determined and defined for the Fairbanks area. We are generally requesting, and your key support is part of that, requesting that there really is a full review of that, that at least there is an emergency declaration made by the military to bring those payment levels for the military staff at least up to the average for Alaska, and then get to the details ultimately behind why it's through the data that they collect, why it's not representing what we all know to be really higher costs that are being incurred. Again, our report itself defines where those costs are much higher over the last few years within Fairbanks versus these other communities, while communities like Anchorage, Kodiak, Juneau, well, obviously deserving increases, receive those increases. In Fairbanks, they did not.
Any comments on that, Bill?
I'll just state that. I mean, obviously, we've been working on the interior housing project, and the the BAH rates are just key to making anything pencil financially to increase housing for the military mission in Fairbanks.
Is it safe to say that identifying this because of this project raised the elevation of the concern for the rates, or was it a concern before?
No, I think it's been a concern, but the increase in population in Fairbanks has really put pressure on the housing market, which has forced us to build, which you can't, or it's very difficult to make the numbers work without an increase in BAH. So, digging into it further, the team here, looked at the rates around the state, and even though Fairbanks certainly is perceived to have a higher cost of living, I think the lowest in the state, if not close. And in some cases,
for the
25% lower.
For the bar rates across the ranks, it is the lowest. And we've really got into the full analysis of what information within the community shows to be increased costs for lease, for utilities, for other related expenses that are covered ultimately by that housing allowance. Again, other communities within Alaska, they deserve increases. They recognize those increases. For Fairbanks, it wasn't recognized. To also address your question initially, has there been broader discussion? Yes, but I do think it has helped quite a bit, the fact that we've gotten involved in looking at the land development. And by able to bring our expertise in this kind of analysis, and I do want to highlight the work that Morgan Neff did in putting this in place, we're able to provide that information and the supporting documents related to it to our delegations where they're able to support that argument directly, and then to as well share that here with the board to be able to have a representation, which I think is very important given the development work and the focus that we have. The military, a key driver for economic development in the state of Alaska, is that yourselves as the Board of Ada also highlight that point.
Well, based on these rates, I'm surprised the bases up there don't have five times more people up there because the military would save them money.
That's an astute observation.
Give me a word for them to live.
Yeah.
No, what you just mentioned, Bill, Board Member Bibblemore, I do think it's important to highlight what you said. It's like there's nowhere for them to live. That is the key driver. While there's an economic driver, unfortunately, in this case, as an incentive to have more staff in Fairbanks because of the lower costs, those lower costs are not driving, in this case with the housing allowance, those lower costs aren't driving housing, which is necessary to ultimately have off-base housing and have a critical element of this military personnel be part of our communities.
So are all the groups that's coming up there now, the F-35s and tankers, is everybody living on base? All the single airmen that are bringing families up, is everybody on base? Staying on base now?
They are in some cases on base, in some cases in the community. It's the fact that there's limited housing available, which is already the case on base. There's limited housing available off base to where the military hasn't given the broader declaration for all families to come up.
So where would they be in the civilian world with the income they have trying to live in Fairbanks? Where would they be? Would they be low income? Where would they be in the ranks?
That depends upon the ranks that are involved. So the ranks that are through this, again, are at officer level, which are command, pilots. The key driver on the numbers that we're talking about in this case, the military's assumption of over 2,000 really in families, military staff and their families coming to the community of North Pole or Fairbanks. That is largely driven by lower-ranked staff that are support personnel, maintenance personnel. Those are the ones that, in this case, are low-income,
struggling,
needing to have affordable, competitively available housing.
My question, Mr. Chair, should this be a little bit stronger language in the now therefore section? I mean, you mentioned a minute ago a remedy of asking for emergency, and I can't remember what he said after that. But should this say something like we request emergency relief that you spoke of a moment ago in addition to immediate increase of all. So there's kind of, I mean, we outlined in the whereas the problem, but it seems like we could potentially be a little more forceful in that section.
Yeah, if I could ask Morgan Ebert, Chief Investment Officer, to address it. He's been looking at specifically the process that the military takes in the declaration of the rates.
Yeah, thank you. If we went the emergency route, it is a temporary solution, and it would not necessarily mean to be permanently adopted. We're not looking for a short-term fix. We're looking for a long-term solution, and that's why we have adopted them to completely review the process, because it has been insufficient for now going on 5 years, going as far as the massive dislocation between Fairbanks and the other military housing areas. So it's not just a one-time, let's immediately fix from an emergency standpoint. Is really getting in and defining what that process is and why this dislocation and deficiency exists in the first place.
Is that a strategic approach to not having somebody view the short-term solution as the solution?
The short-term solution is something that is deployed quite frequently, but it also comes right back. So it's something that comes in and then they can reverse it right back to the original allowance that was published that prior year.
If there's an opportunity to achieve an increase, I think our preference universally would be that it's something that's permanent in the way that they're are looking at the data and adjusting the rates for what we know is a higher cost of living within the Fairbanks and Norfolk area, just from utilities alone. But in general, housing construction costs are higher. We know that here. The building seasons is shorter. Getting crews are limited. All those components really lead to higher costs, which should mean that lease rates within the area do reflect that. And so if we're really going to make way for a development that is 100 to 150 units, that really supports the decision that the military command elects to train what is critical, I think, families up to Alaska for these servicemen, for this to be a welcoming position ultimately for the military side, which we know we want it to be. We do need housing allowances that support that on a longer term basis to make those decisions.
Okay. So I am really pleased that AEA is involved in the project and given this visibility. I'm sorry. My bad. I'm really pleased that Ada's involved in this project and bringing that visibility to our congressional delegation as well as the delegation taking it on to the generals mentioned in the package. Without that visibility, there would be no change, in my opinion. I'm just appalled that it took the state agency to be involved to give them that visibility that may affect change.
Well, again, I think you as the board of ADA have a key role, right, in identifying areas where there is inequality for economic development within the state, and this is one of those areas that we have identified in the process of pursuing the development that you have asked us to do on the due diligence side.
Chairman, go ahead. Morgan and Alan, I really thank you, especially since I was stationed up there and know that it's more expensive to live up there, especially having a house there where I had to fill a heating tank worth of oil every month. It is more expensive to live up there. So I thank you for doing this project and trying to push this through. It's something that needed. The troops shouldn't have to suffer because of some mathematical error or someone making an arbitrary decision. Have you looked at what is a comparable city in the lower 48 to Fairbanks' DAH rates?
That's a good question, but because of Alaska's unique landscape, the most comparable areas would be the five other military housing areas within the state, and that's what we really associated with. Now, what we're hearing.
Have you seen like Alaska's rates are lower than other areas in the lower 48?
I mean, it's going to be on a relative basis, but I mean, you're starting to see a lot of communities that are designated military housing areas have the same dislocation. I mean, this, keep in mind, and this is one thing that Alan and I have discussed, is that this is based off of, you know, 2022 published rates and what was the building environment, you know, that existed in going into 2022. So this is not just a 26% differential. This is going to have to be a holistic review as to what is the new cost, because it's not just coming in and looking at new rental rates within the Fairbanks community. It's really looking at what the cost of this building, not just with ADA's potential project, but with all investors looking at building. So that is a very different aspect than when you look at it in other communities like Florida. Florida did a very similar resolution to support their increases as well, but it's because their rental market has just gone parabolic as far as pricing goes. They actually still have inventory. It's just none of the servicemen and women can afford it. Here, it's that plus we don't have the inventory or the ability to mobilize private investors to come in and build the necessary housing needs.
Well, what I'm getting at is, instead of just, I know Fairbanks is a priority, but maybe we should push our resolution to state that they need to not only look at Fairbanks area, but Alaska as a whole.
Okay. Yeah.
So one of the things that we
Because like
out,
you take a look for Anchorage, for example, for the longest time our average price for a house was in the 300s, and now it's 420 and growing. So the cost to live in Anchorage is growing just as much as it is in Fairbanks.
Well, let's just keep moving to the valley.
Clarification, the data that we do have in the report on page 8 provides an analysis of where the Alaskan MHAs fall in a quartile basis, right, amongst all of the, what we highlight here, 339 published MHAs. And what you'll see in this data is that while the communities within, you know, specifically Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, Kodiak Island, and Anchorage, correlate, right? They sit in there between the 70 to 80% percentile. Fairbanks is actually at high 50s, low 60s percentile, almost there. It doesn't, in that case, we're really trying to highlight that even amongst the correlation of the five MHAs broadly with the total MHAs, Fairbanks continues to be an outlier.
Yeah, no, thank you. I actually, it feels like it's been years since I put this information together, and I appreciate you highlighting that, because I do remember running that as a corollary versus the other 339 designated MHAs within the United States. So Fairbanks does also sit as an outlier. They have a lower 50% quartile when you look at it holistically across the United States.
Mm-hmm. But it's a very good question.
Yeah.
Board Member Fogle, that you're asking, right, is overall Alaska, where Alaska sits within there, and then the correlation with Fairbanks. But there is detail that's in there.
All right, so any further discussion? I understand a motion.
This is Board Member Kendrick. I move resolution G22-11, base housing allowance increase for Fairbanks MHA.
This is Iowa now, second.
Any further discussion? Randy, would you pull the board?
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Pandig?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Beavermore?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Proust?
Yes. Thank you. Bring us to item number C, resolution G22-12, ratifying sole agreement between Mr. Castor and AEA-ADA.
So, Chairman, before the board is resolution number G22-12, ratifying the August 3rd, 2022 settlement agreement between Kenneth Castor III, the Alaska Energy Authority, and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. I would like to request that Wendy Horton, our representative from the Department of Law, could join me at the table, please. I do understand that you reviewed as well a motion or a resolution in during the AEA board meeting. This is very similar to that motion. And I would ask Wendy if you could please speak to it.
Thank you, Chair. This is a resolution that is ratifying the settlement agreement that was approved in the August board meeting. And just as a refresher, since there's been a few weeks since then, this was all just a timing issue. The Department of Law was working on the settlement agreement with Mr. Kastner at the time that the August 3rd board meeting was happening. So the board did approve that we enter into that settlement agreement. This is ratifying the entire agreement. So it's the final legal step to make that a valid agreement.
Okay. And no difference in the one we used earlier?
Besides referencing the correct entity, that's the only material change.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
Go ahead.
I'd like to motion resolution G22-12 ratifying settlement agreement between Mr. Kenneth Kastner and ADA for approval.
Okay. Your second?
This is Board Member Ken Digga, second.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Just prior to that, just for the signed copy, there's a slight typo in the title. Alaska's misspelled in the ADA portion.
I'll take care of that too.
Do you call the board, Randy?
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Kendig?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Vivian?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Next on the agenda is executive session review, ADA FY 2022 draft audited financial statements. I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session.
This is Board Member Kendig. I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss the draft audited financial statements. A public discussion of these matters would have an adverse effect upon the finances of ADA. The executive session is supported by the Open Meetings Act, which allows the board to consider specific confidential matters in executive session.
Your second?
This is Albert. I'll second.
Further discussion? Amy, we can call the board.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Kendig?
Yes.
Mr. Vogel?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Beavermore?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Cruz?
Yes. All right. We'll take a 5-minute break and move into executive session.
Chair, you on the record?
Thank you. We're going to come out of the executive session, and I'm going to advise the public the board has not taken any actions on the matters discussed while in executive session. And this information limited to the discussion of protected information related to ADA's draft financial statements. That being said, it brings us to item number E, FY 2022 ADA audited financial statements. And we have a presentation.
So we will be, following the conversation, we are going to be issuing our final financial statements, and we'll be posting those to the board or to our website on Friday, but we're looking really for the final to be issued by the auditors and made available at that point in time. There are some elements I do want to highlight just to make everyone aware with the financial statements and some of the changes. The biggest issue really that we've been working through, and I really want to identify with Donna and her staff on with our shared services, but really the accounting side for ADA have been focusing on, is a material accounting change that was required, ultimately related to GASB rules on and as they apply to ADA's financial statements. This is particularly related to leases or direct project investments that we have, largely associated with the investment we have in the Red Dog or the Long Mountain Transportation System. So within that financial statement, what people will end up seeing is on itself within so within the first part of the auditor's letter, which is going to be the front part of our financial statement, is adoption of a new accounting standard. And then this relates to specifically note 13 within the financial statements, which goes into a bit of the detail that's on it. So I really want to highlight that to everyone, that that's an important note to read within our financial statements. Fundamentally, what is occurring is that we have had and reported generally assets under management of about $1.4, $1.5 billion. In this case, they've been readjusted upwards to a before a net offset of liabilities, a position of about $1.7 billion. And from that net liabilities, it brings it back down to about $1.4, $1.45 billion, which, again, registered and identified within the financial statements. The other thing that I would highlight really within this is that we have a breakdown on our financial statements with all of our underlying assets, you know, looking at cash investments that we have and maintain. It's important to identify the fact with the cash investments that these are return of capital that we have from prior investments in the state of Alaska. We maintain these balances through external money managers to be available for future development and investment within the state of Alaska. We also then have an accounting of the breakdown that goes between our unrestricted investments, our loan assets, our development assets, and there's a very nice summary of this, which is on page 8 of our financial statements, which breaks it down and gives ultimately the total asset level. So, again, there's a lot of detail that's within our financial statements, giving, you know, particularly the breakdown. I do like the fact of identifying this with the keynote and key factors on page 11 here with GASB 87. That's the particular rule and the adjustments that impacted our financial statements on that. But identifying that net investment in capital assets increased by $109 million related particularly to that rule. And there was additional investments adjustments that were upwards in our asset base because of our investments of about $49, $50 million. The other thing is on page 13, under operating expenses, we're identifying the fact that our operating expenses, what we cover from our own revenues that we earn, ADA does not draw from the unrestricted general fund of the state of Alaska. We pay and cover our own operating expenses. We've actually improved our level of operating expenses, and this what this really represents predominantly is the increased expenses that we undertook during the AK CARES program, really to deliver that for the state of Alaska in partnership with DCCED. And now we have a audited financial statement that's recognizing us getting back to our normal operations, which is actually saving money, making more available for reinvestment in the state. Ultimately, we are in showing that we continue to be profitable, have historically been profitable. We are continuing to manage our assets on a fiduciary basis in compliance with our statutes and our regulations. And I really wanted to thank the involvement from Leland Miller and his team with Ide Bailey in delivering to us what appears to me to be a clean audit.
Yes, so we are the two reports to focus on from our perspective is one, on the auditor's opinion, we give them a clean opinion on the financial statements, and then also the fact that in the single audit portion of it on our auditor's opinion that we didn't have any findings that needed to be reported to the board. And so, again, I want to just echo what Alan said with Donna and Brendan and others and their efforts to get us to where we are at this point. So thank you.
Questions? Remind me again what the statutory net income is for this?
Well, we will be calculating that and announcing that with declaration of the dividend on December 7th. So this is a report on our, under accounting rules, our net income position. Under the statutory net income definition within the dividend statute, there does recognize the fact that it excludes unrecognized gains and losses. Chair, by you identifying that, there is something I do want to highlight too as well within the financial statement, is that under our operating income numbers, you're going to see the revenues, you're going to see a adjustment there that represents a negative close to $50 million on our investment pool. That is an unrecognized loss. That is something that is excluded ultimately in the calculation of the statutory net income. And to give a bit of an explanation with this, that's recognizing the fact that we held a very conservative portfolio of securities that were at low interest rates that we have had historically, and there has been a dramatic increase in those interest rates, which in this case gets recognized as an unrecognized loss in that investment portfolio. Doesn't mean there's an actual loss. We are continuing to earn interest revenues from that pool, and we continue to have that capital to be able to reinvest in the state of Alaska. It is basically reflecting the current mark-to-market on that asset under management with current interest rates.
Okay. So before that legislation would pass, that we didn't have to use mark to market on December 31st, it could be a big swing in our prop P&L statement.
You may recall there was an amendment that was done to the statute to specifically recognize that the point you just said, Chair, is that it was not intended that it would be impacted by unrecognized losses or gains.
Right.
And that this was the adjustment to recognize really true cash that's available for distribution.
All right. Further questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Chairman, this is Howard. I would like to motion for approval the fiscal year 2022 ADA audited financial statements as presented by our CEO, CFO, and auditor.
This is Bill Kendrick. I second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, hearing none. Amy, would you pull the board?
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Kendrick?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Ellich?
He's previously engaged, so he's not
Mr.
here.
Mr. Beaglemore?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Cruz?
Here. Yes.
Motion passes.
All right. Brings us to item number 7, director's comments. First up, A is number A, Alan. So let's take you to review historical investment performance.
The chairman, board, this was brought up by the public comment caller. It is related to a report that was prepared and funded particularly by the Salmon State and engaging different economists to take a look at ADA's financial positions and reporting on our reported investment returns or lack thereof in their economic report. The specific economic report itself is entitled Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, Cost and Financial Performance, A Long, Hard Look. They held a press event. We were contacted by different journalists that day, looking for a response. We were unaware of the preparation of this report or the review of the specific information that they were looking at, and therefore want to highlight to yourselves, to the public, who were not involved and or provided information that in any way leads to their conclusions, and that is part of our concern. So in engaging the different journalists that contacted us, and recognizing the fact that there's, in our belief, there's no merit to the conclusions that come to in this report, that it's important that we take the process at this point to issue an RFP and engage a credible party to really do this kind of analysis. I think it's important. It would, I believe, ultimately support what we're trying to identify as management of the role, the function, the need for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority within the state of Alaska, and the fact that there's merit behind the investments and returns that we have. I would like to ask if Morgan Neff, our Chief Investment Officer, can join, because he's a principal party in how we're putting together the RFP. But before getting into some of those details, if I could talk just briefly on the report itself. They've come to the conclusion that the funds that were initially provided to ADA, which, again, are incorrect in what they have in the report, but irrespective of that the funds that were given to ADA should have and would have benefited Alaskans more by being contributed just directly to the permanent fund. I find it interesting, right, we have the future director of the permanent fund sitting here on our board, Devin Mitchell. So the comments I've made are really trying to highlight the differences between our organizations. You may give some color to that if you wanted to. I see ADA's role in the state of Alaska being very different from the definition of a permanent fund. We invest in Alaska. Our mission is to solely invest in Alaska, create jobs, create economic development opportunities. My understanding, and Mr. Mitchell, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the base function of the permanent fund is to expand the benefits of the endowment of the permanent fund for all, you know, for the benefit of all Alaskans, which means getting the best return wherever that may be. It may be in Alaska, but also may be externally, and I think it has probably been externally in that case. What we are, as an economic development agency, is, and I'm going to use the words of our chief investment officer in this case, we prime the pump. We get that engine started. We get the economic development started to the point where private capital really does the full investment, goes forward with it. I would say fundamentally when you have that role, you're not going to have a 100% batting record. You're not going to be perfect in any context. And to assume that there should be a level of perfection on that investment really needs to say to me a couple things, that you're asking your economic development agency to not take risks within the state for what appear to be good opportunities. You're also saying, because fundamentally within our statutes, we have a requirement to always have the support of the local community, that we aren't to actually go forward with the support of that community or their requests or work with them, that we're to make independent decisions ultimately irrespective of what that support is. And I don't believe that that is the case of how we have been implementing that in decisions and opportunities that historically the organization has undertaken. So are losses going to happen? Yes. But our financials also show that overall we have always self-funded, which means we've met our own expenses with the revenue we bring in. We have always continued to invest in the state of Alaska, which means our investments have produced returns. They have returned that capital we've been able to reinvest. And our financials, as we just discussed with our auditors, are audited. They're available to the public for review. They show that this organization fundamentally has the returns, has a distinct fiduciary governance control of the assets that are under management. That's the general issue, I'd say, on the purpose of the entity. The other point that I want to highlight, they say that we have had a negative return. Historically, from day one to today, that is not taking into account, and if they had approached us, we possibly would have been in a position to be able to share this, although I don't think it would have matched the objective of their report. You know, the information at hand seems to be directed towards a decision as opposed to the facts of the matter, but if the facts were fully taken into consideration, which I believe an external report would do, they would show that the legislature, the communities, have asked us to undertake certain asset investments that do not, by definition, have a return. And in this case, we have on our balance sheet a little over $340 million worth of assets that relate to that. We have the Interior Energy Project, where the legislature specifically told us to create a creditworthy entity that can go out and ultimately finance itself and build itself to a point of self-finance. But you need to start somewhere. And that came with the funding that from the legislature to our SEPS fund. And then the terms that we put in place They do not have any type of economic return, any return on the assets. They do have a return of asset component to it for the next really 25 years. And then it has a very small incremental return on top of that after that point. We own the Snettisham Hydro Project, which is the principal source, I can't say sole source, but the principal source of economic electricity and utility services to the city of Juneau. I ask you, the board, what rate of return are we supposed to be charging every citizen within the Juneau? That is sufficient enough for the parties that don't want us to do other external investment?
I thought we applied to RCA for the utility.
We have a certificate of public convenience for the transmission lines we have in place that convey it. But that structure was required by the legislature to be back-to-back because of the fact it needed to provide cost-competitive utility rates to the city of Juneau. We were mandated by the legislature, just one other example, to enter into the Skagway Ore Terminal. That was an investment that we put in place in the middle of a environmental remediation. The community at that time did not have the full support of the cruise ship industry. It really was a nascent industry at all for Alaska, and they were focusing on continuing economic development opportunities within Skagway through mining. But the mining interest would not touch an asset that was in the middle of remediation. ADA was mandated to come in. We made the investments. We have managed that asset responsibly. It has been fully written off on our books. And the economic return we receive from it is fundamentally, by their own definition, infinite. Because we receive a return on this off a fully depreciated asset, which we will be returning ultimately to the city of Skagway in 2023 after our role has been fully completed. So these fundamental elements need to get recognized. The other thing briefly to identify is the fact that when I do the calculation on what we report in our income on our projects and our capital investments, what we recognize in fashion those statements as income related to those specific projects, and you exclude the projects where we've been mandated to make an investment without a return, we have a return that's in excess of 6.7%. As for an economic development agency on a broad, on a comparative basis with other states, it's significant. It's substantial. We should be, in this case, celebrated as opposed to identified by a party that really is fundamentally opposed to any other form of development in the state, attacking us for the investment that's in place in Alaska. So with that being my view on the information that's been shared within the report, we want to retain a credible external party that in concert with other economic development agencies throughout the U.S., fundamentally report on. We believe this analysis should be undertaken. We're looking to issue this RFP as soon as we can, well, ultimately really within the next week, to get a party in place to be able to define this report and be providing it ultimately to the legislature so they can consider the a credible investigation on this.
Yeah, and if the board doesn't mind if I add, that's exactly what we're doing in the RFP, which, as Alan mentioned, we're planning to go public next week with it. We're defining the RFP completely objective, looking at the facts, looking to identify a firm that could come in, which is, has been a robust process pre and post pandemic with economic development reviews, and really not only looking at, I just want to make sure, not just the investment performance, but collectively looking at all of the fiscal, financial, and economic impacts that have contributed to ADA being successful since its inception. So we're looking forward to finalizing this RFP language with procurement and looking forward to getting that final report. But again, this is something that we are modeling under best practices because this is something that's very, very common within other economic development authorities within the United States, and we're modeling our approach around that.
An analysis like this cannot be taken lightly. And I'm saying that from the point of it's imperative that the state has a function that ADA performs. And to the extent that credibility is given to an analysis that looks to take away that function for the state, that's a critical issue. It can't be taken lightly. And so we want to make sure ultimately that we have really a benchmark that can be assessed that's equivalent to other economic development agencies that I believe ultimately with some questions, previous questions asked, like on the analysis of the ball rate, how does it compare nationally? That we're able to produce a document that compares on that basis. This is not currently the case with the economic study supported by the same state, which is an active party against the development of the Western Southern Access Road.
Mr. Chairman?
Albert?
Thank you. Alan, I'm confused. The caller this morning was complaining about she didn't gain access to a news conference or press conference. That was not our press conference, correct?
No, it was. She is referring to a press conference that we did provide. And let me actually take this opportunity to introduce you to someone who's our new communications director, Josie Wilson. Would Josie, if you want to join me? So Josie joined us, this is already a month ago, and has been, basically hitting the ground running. With her recently joining us, this came up, and one of the issues was we did want to put together a press event to counter the initial coverage that was really identifying particular issues on this report. So Josie was bringing that press event together. I don't know if you can address.
Sure, happy to. First of all, I'm Josie Wilson, and I'm honored to serve as your Director of Communications and External Affairs here. I started on September 19th, and it has been dynamic, and it has been a privilege. Working for this organization has truly been wonderful, and I just can't say enough about how wonderful Ada is and how great Alan has been in my onboarding, despite being day 6 receiving this information. I would like to just, of course, reiterate that we are building transparency as much as possible, and we are very committed to public transparency. And so I will look further into the comment that came in this morning so that we can have appropriate information available. But it was not a full press conference. It wasn't open to every single person who wanted to come. We invited certain press reporters that had asked us for information, and we invited them so we could answer their questions. So it was not a full press conference. It wasn't a public meeting. It wasn't any of those things. We wanted to have a conversation with some of the reporters that were covering this. So just to be clear, we also are happy to have anybody reach out to us if they have any questions. Any reporters, I'm happy to address them if they have any questions. And so we did research this call this morning, and I was not reached out to by that person. So just want to reiterate, I'm happy to be here. I'm honored to be here. And if anybody would like from the press to reach us, we're happy to have those conversations.
Well, welcome, Josie. Thank you.
So this is Commissioner Sandy, and I participated in that press event. And, Josie, thank you so much for your assistance and for hitting the ground running. I certainly witnessed that and really appreciate your efforts. And, I think all of us, as board members, knowing as much time as we spend in each of these board meetings and the consideration of the project in front of us and the decisions that we make, could all say that we're really passionate about the mission of Alaska to promote and develop and advance our economic growth, and that's certainly the reason that I serve. But I've also always felt really lucky that we have an agency like ADA that can create opportunities for especially responsible resource development in Alaska. And so, part of the reason I participated in that press conference and commented back is I just think now as a board, it's really important because I think when third parties present information and call it impartial or factual when that information may not be either of those things, I think we have a real responsibility to respond because I worry that at some point, ADA is going to be in jeopardy, either in our ability to act and pursue the projects that are in the best interest of Alaska and our mission. And so I just wanted to make that comment. And I also just wanted to say, with regard to transparency, I've been on the board, I think, for 3 years, and I've absolutely seen the transparency. And I think that the other thing that we could maybe do a better job or that the public deserves to hear more about is just how sensitive the information can be that we're looking at. And so I think that that's important to call out, because just like a bank wouldn't be able to release publicly all of the information in front of us, because people would essentially never go to that bank to do business there. So I think walking that fine line of the public process while also being responsible to the folks that we do business with, I think is something that we need to do a better job of explaining to the public. But I fully support this RFC. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. So, unless there's any other questions?
Well, at some point in time, I'd like to know, since its inception, how many actual loans, individual loans, to last few businesses that you've done, the cumulative dollar amount, and how many jobs that represents.
That is what would be a product of this review.
Yeah.
I
thought
that shows you taking notes for that question.
Yeah. I bet you it's thousands. Anyway. Thank you, Alan. All right, let's go to update on the maintenance of the building. Item number B.
So we have an update for you. You know, we had previously a presentation where we're looking at, and thank you very much, Board, for the allocation of capital that we can make some civil improvements on the building. It's principally focused in what we have identified it principally on the parking lot adjustments, but there have been some internal improvements that we're focused on. So one of the things is Brad is our own asset manager within ADA. He is actually with and outside right now with the person that is putting in our new signage for the building. So we have ADA and AEA logos. So he was going to be part of this presentation, but what I would like to do is just kind of highlight how we've been advancing, because visually it's very hard to come by the building to say, you know, we've allocated in total about $1.2 million to identify for civil improvement. But from existing funding, we would only really be advancing about $400,000. And we are currently in place of putting in the RFPs for the demolition of the, where I think we have actually the bidder being identified for the demolition of Blue Central, which is what creates the avenue to link into Northern Lights that have access to create it. Here we have Brad Bigelow is joining us, again, our own asset manager within ADA. He has been the project manager specifically on the improvements that we're looking to undertake. Brad, at this point in time, just really kind of give an update, if you would please, on where we're at with the different RFPs. You know, we have a contracted winner on the demolition.
We do. We currently have awarded that contract to Coldfoot Environmental. We have the fan replacement, two fans up in the penthouse, one fan in the basement that's been awarded to Superior Mechanical. We've got miscellaneous projects going on throughout the facility.
Does that mean I can see a bright hell now?
Yes, you may. So, yeah, we've got numerous projects. The sign guys are currently out setting footings and preparing to set the can so we can get that sign installed, get two old ADA designed signs, the old ADA logo off the side of the building. Looking forward to that. We've got, like I said, numerous projects in and throughout the building.
So as a reminder, we have a presentation that's attached and also linked with the agenda. But the second page on progress here, what that's doing is reminding what the plan is, right, for the park.
I would have a question for you.
If you could go through, when you go through your presentation, can you please highlight the area of improvement for security and safety for the employees?
So what I would preface it to say, Board Member Fogel, is the entire project is for the safety of our employees. As you know, we have a We have a parking lot that is limited at this point, and we have two other lots that are located across 27th Avenue. So in most cases, getting limited parking, well, we also have additional parking that's with the lot that's adjacent related to the Blue Central building. Everything has been where people have to cross the street or come over ultimately to the building. There's not a cohesive parking lot. So the entire concept itself for redoing this, combining, getting rid of Blue Central, having access off of Northern Lights, having the consolidated parking area, having improved lighting related to it, is a safety and health improvement for all staff. That's ADA and AEA staff and our shared service staff that are here. We also have an awning that's being put in place on the building, you know, for our entrances that need updating. We have internally made improvements on lighting within the building. And Brad, you may want to give a summary on that.
Just to follow on to
just one more question about this first.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, addition of electric vehicle charging stations. So is that like inviting all the public to come in?
I'll take that. No, it's not. Okay. They're networked. So there's EV chargers. I'm learning this as well. There are networked charging stations that they can come in and plug their car and do nothing happens until they go on their phone, dial up their app, charge their app. We'll get a surcharge off of that wattage usage. It'll be on ADA. In our ADA parking lot. So
a bunch of people come driving in the parking lot and plug in.
So part of the plan is to include the EV station. It would be available to a public user like any other EV station that's available. What Brad is identifying the fact is that it is not a free station that's available. They would have to pay.
I'm not worried about free. I'm just worried about it. The whole public's driving in your parking lot all day long and all night. Plugging in, paying for the fuel or the electricity, disrupting your business. That's all. We're not a service station here. So
Chair, where it's located, we don't believe it's going to be disrupting our business. And
where is it located?
It's located at the far end of the. For the public, I'm identifying our First Street in Progress. You have that gray car that's up there. On the northeast corner, see right there?
Yeah.
That's principally where it would be located.
Why not?
So that would be
along the street. Yeah.
It'll be placed in this location right here, directly across from security. So during the day, security is in their vehicle, or on foot, around the facility, and we have signage that says ADA, AEA employee only. Or guests.
So they're going to be there for 20 minutes. Middle of 2 o'clock in the morning, so I'm going to show up, plug in.
Shared
for 20 minutes.
This building is shared by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Right? I understand. You don't see a power generator here, do you? Plugged into the. We'll have to discuss that.
That's the chair.
It's safety. I don't know if that's.
It's the way of the world.
Huh?
It's the way of the world to some extent, and I agree, it is part of AEA, and as far as planning for the future, it's a reasonable thing to have an EV charging station when an employer is
working. You have a full parking lot across the way that you can put it in, and it wouldn't disrupt us. We're already limited on parking as it is, and it's going to be 24/7, correct?
There are other issues, right, related to that parking lot that is across the way. We're not making those current improvements to it. And with the two different lots, we're currently looking at with being able to accommodate all staff within the current parking lot area, what we actually do with that lot. It could be a valuable asset, could be conveyed to
a commercial with power plug-ins. We'll do that about that.
So if we could go on to the slide that's talking about the current status of the RFP.
I'd like to just bring one other issue up with life, health, safety. in our conversations with DOT and the MOA in regards to our right-of-way off of Northern Lights to get into the building, ingress, egress. They are both, MOA and DOT are both extremely happy to have that opportunity to bring in ambulance, fire service vehicles in off of Northern Lights versus only through our 27th access. So that's in my opinion, that's a huge step for us as well for life health safety for employees and people in our.
Is there already access now? I mean, into the parking lot over here? No.
There, no, sir. No.
So they give you a driveway permit? Is that what they do?
We're working with DOT on that at the moment.
And, you know, again, principally that's linked with being able to demolish Blue Central.
Yeah.
And have that avenue through there.
I can just say from experiences, I've been waiting 2 years for a driveway for in the valley from the DOT. So I'm glad you guys are getting somewhere.
So with the other internal improvements that we are also highlighting is that above this area, the boardroom area, there are cubicles in the setup for AEA staff that they're currently occupying. And we also made improvements on the carpeting within it and improved the LED lighting that is throughout the second and first floor area of the building. If we could go on then to, if we could talk about the sign, please.
Well, in addition to the sign, I'd also like to bring up, next month we are doing 12 or 13 ADA AEA employees are doing first aid CPR training here. I've just purchased 5 new AED units for the facility. With our chip shortage and supply chain issues, I can't guarantee when they're going to be here. We have current AEDs. I've had them inspected, but they do have a life cycle of about 5 years. They are at that life cycle, so I've purchased 5 new AEDs for the facility, and we'll have 12 people on site that will be first aid CPR AED certified as well for life health safety issues.
So if we could go to the next slide there, please. So signing, you know, ultimately, we still believe we're on time. This is what we had conveyed with the proposal. If we're able to issue, this is principally the RFP for the full parking lot development, that we're able to get that out in the early part of November, we should have someone identified and work being undertaken then, really with the breakup and the field season happening, and be able to complete it really in 2023. If we could just go one more from there. There we go. So that overall is the timing that we're looking at on the solicitations, getting things out. Really, the way we're writing the RFPs, the way we're writing for the requests on the solicitations, RFPs, is to be as broad and expansive or inclusive as possible for any contractor that's interested really working with us. We do ask them to, Brad, if you could identify where we're going to be posting the RFPs.
Clearly we'll post it on our website. We'll post it at Plans Room through AGC as well. So, and then we'll identify contractors that we know do parking lots such as this.
So, again, we want to make it as broadly available to anyone who has an interest, has a crew, has experience to be able to do it, to really take a look at these RFPs, to submit a bid, and hopefully we'll be able to get something concluded shortly where we get crews identified and get the work ultimately, you know, undertaken for 2023.
Any concerns about the inflationary what we have right now?
Clearly. I can't control anything.
So
we've had the conversation about
it. Back better, so if we have to do something from our perspective, let us know.
And we will. I've been working with Brad really on getting as up-to-date information on the budget as possible. And we've had some savings in some areas than we had estimated, and we certainly know there are going to be increases otherwise. But if there's any change, really substantive change on that, we will be coming back to the board identifying that.
Okay. And one additional life health safety issue is the heated sidewalk out in front of the facility, so that we're not tracking in ice melt, and we're ice melting, snow melting the front of the building, improving the drainage. So it was before I was here, but apparently there was a lake out front that then froze and was a serious slip, trip, and fall hazard. We've eliminated that issue, but it was, yeah, or a canoe. I guess that was the option, too. So those are other life health safety things that we've
really... Have you identified anything else that we should be looking at, you think?
At this point, I'd say no.
Sorry, how early and how late does the security guard stay?
They're here.
That is his hour. Let's not answer that question. Can I tell it to you directly? I'd rather not
get
it being identified hours.
But we've extended it.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Inside the building, is there anything that, you know, that...
I'd rather not address it. That's a security issue in the building. I'd rather talk with you directly.
No, not security. Just walls or upgrades or painting or lights or...
That kind of stuff is ongoing.
Back or...
Regularly. Part of the two fans in the fan house, the one fan four in the basement that's being replaced with the new air handling unit, and I'm constantly doing upgrades to a 72-year-old building, or a building built in 72. Okay.
Brian, any more?
That is the next proposal once we have the full contracting available, able to come back and, you know, basically commit to the budget that we identified, right, if there's any adjustment necessary to it, and then we will be asking Brad to start looking at that next plan.
So for parking, do we have enough for all the employees to be able to park on this side of the road right now?
No. We'll have, with the increased parking we'll have along the where Blue Central sits currently, Star Property, we'll have 55 parking stalls available to employees. We've identified the last lot across 27th with an additional 28 stalls, which gives us 83. We are working with the community right now. The building, based on size, has to have 100 stalls. We have 5 spots reduced because we have direct access to bus stops. And we did a parking lot count, and we're getting that reduced to 80 based on our PCNs in the building. Some of the PCNs are down at the AEA warehouse. They're assigned to the facility, but they're not here in the facility.
To be code compliant and working with the municipality, we do have to have additional spaces that are available. The thing that we've done,
the employees can be able to park as close and as safe as possible.
Yes.
And we have instituted where employees are flexible as far as working home a couple days during the week. So on average, when we talk about the number of employees that are actually in the building on any particular day, we should be able to fully accommodate them in the front lot.
What about putting a flashing pedestrian lights where they cross? I've seen people do that before.
It is something we've considered. I did talk to my engineer about it, but it's not something that we've, at this point, it's not something that we've addressed, but it's not something that...
Did you take a look at that? We want to do every effort we can for safety, especially dark, you know, flashing, you know.
Happy to follow up on that.
All right.
So that's the update we have right now, and we'll can look to continue as we get to certain milestones, be able to bring it back and update you on this major project in the building.
Mr. Chair, before you move on to the long dashboard, I double book myself again if I do need to leave. but I wanted just to take a moment, because this is my last meeting, to say that it's been a pleasure to participate in the board. I look forward to the investment performance review document that you're going to put together and seeing some of the other good work that the organization's been working on come to fruition, because I do think I know that sometimes ADA can be a target, but it's a result of doing what you've been asked to do, even though it's been difficult. And so I want you to know that certainly from my perspective, it's appreciated, and if I could continue serving on a board, this would have been one of the ones I would have chosen. So,
thank you. Devin, thank you for your help and services. Look forward to you making this whole bunch of money over there to new position. No pressure. There's only 735,000.
In this room is looking for
you. Yeah. It's the Devin check. Once a year we get a check from Devin. That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
All the best, Devin. Revenue. Or maybe the governor, I don't know.
Do you want me to continue? So I'm cognizant of everyone's time. I know we're getting later in the day. We do have our underlying reports, which we provide on a schedule, and this monthly we provide the loan participation and really the loan report. So hopefully you had a chance to review that. Again, the one thing I highlight is this is now being produced directly on the report, and Tiffany and her team have really worked hard along with Justin within our IT department to make this more expedited report processing. But ultimately, really what we identify the fact is that where our delinquencies are fairly clear at this point, they're really identifying the high quality and the value of the loan portfolio that we manage. And there's really nothing to fundamentally report that that is any different really from that, unless you have any questions.
My only, I keep saying this out. It was below $400 million consistently now in our loan fund. So I know we really can't control our pre-flight, but it would be nice to see some more loans coming through.
So the interest rates are getting
up. It is an impact on our
environment to do that in, but.
We're actually trending better. I know it's not what you're looking for, but we're actually trending better than the general market from the slowdown. The commercial real estate market is starting to look like it's going to be around down 14% year over year. And so from where we're at year over year, we're trending better. But I think Tiffany and her group are, and some of the meetings we've had and some of the recent engagements we've had, I think will end up bearing fruition as far as having, positive impact on the education of the portfolio with our financial partners out there in the community.
And I would also say this is turning across other state organizations. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is experiencing the same decline in the portfolio right now.
Yeah. My only baton for that is I've been seeing a downward trend for probably the past year. Mm-hmm. So this isn't something that has started just because of interest rates. This has been happening for a little while. We used to be up around 450, and now we've trended just shy of 400 now. So
I think it'll go back up, personally. I think.
And I would say, looking historically, if you look at when the housing crisis occurred, a couple of years after the housing crisis, we had one of the lowest years on record at $11 million. So we have not trended down that way that far, and we're still using financials that were affected by the pandemic, so I think we're going to see some positive changes going forward, and we've also seen an increased amount of pay downs. As you can see on the report, there are over $22 million in pay downs and pay off. That is quite a bit. That is almost about half of what we typically have in a year, and we've experienced that in the first quarter of this fiscal year. So those two obstacles combined to make the perfect storm of having that declining portfolio. But I do think we've got a lot in the pipeline, and we're going to see this decline in the interest rate, but we'll also, I think, see some larger loans come out of it rather than some volume. It'll be less volume and some larger projects coming through.
Credit unions or other banks around the state, any opportunities with that coming up, Tiffany?
Caught
up with us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we just spoke at the Alaska Bankers Association, and all the major institutions represented there for the banks. And we have reached out to a couple different credit unions, the major ones across the state. But what's happening now is what we spoke about earlier, is that the interest rates on the bank side are so large as well that in some cases the project cannot cash flow at these particular rates, or the borrower is deciding to wait it out and see if the interest rates will adjust. So I think we're going to see some changes going on with that until things stabilize. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, following that, we do have our other reports, right? The board resolution report, as well as the updated fact sheets that we have related to the development projects we have implemented. I'm happy to address any questions that the board may have.
Before we go to board comments, is any questions from Alan or staff? Julie?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Well, our next meeting is December 7th. Interesting day. 2022.
It's on that PE thing.
Something. Then we got the board training, ethics, confidence, and conflict of interest.
1-8-7-7.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Yes. And that will be presented by Wendy Warden.
Okay. Again. Is this like continuing education? Do we get, like, credits?
I would. I took the box that's remaining for here.
Yeah.
And the sticker.
Sticker. I'll print it next
time. Okay. Board comments.
Well, we do need to do the board training.
Oh, right now?
Yeah. Oh, it's now?
Oh.
I thought it was December 7th.
No.
Oh, man.
She's just trying to.
I mean, we're like tired, Wendy.
I make a motion we move it to December 7th.
I second. I can't second.
Second.
I'm okay with that, but if I can just give you guys like a little bit of prep work before the meeting, and then talk about that and what we will.
There's a motion on the floor.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to, my suggestion would be, if we are delaying it to the next board meeting, that we do put it at the start of the meeting.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've only been sitting here since 8 o'clock this morning.
I understand.
Okay. All right. Is there any objection for the 7th? During then, it's the 7th.
Just real quick, board. If you'll just entertain me for just
the
one minute.
The board chair recognizes Wendy.
Thank you. I will ask, what we're going to go through is the Ethics Act. We're going to go through confidentiality and conflicts of interest in the training. I will ask if you would please look on the Department of Law's website under Law Resources. It's law.alaska.gov. It is spelled correctly on the website. If you would please take a look at those law resources, there's a tab that's the Ethics Act, and it's Ethics Resources. There's a really great PowerPoint.
Why don't you just forward those?
I will follow up with all that, too, but I'm just asking, I'm making a plea, if you guys will read my email, please look at this before we do the meeting. That would be really helpful in the training. I think we will get a lot of good dialogue if everybody's at least had a little bit of time to work out.
If I could ask you, Rainey, could you send out, you know, get the information, be able to send out that information fully to the board?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Is the HR person available after this meeting?
Should be.
Okay. I'd like to visit with her after the meeting.
Did you make the motion?
Yeah.
So I guess the next motion is to adjourn.
Well, I want to make sure the public board comments.
Okay.
So, does anybody have board comments? Julie?
No, thank you.
Bill?
Nothing to add. Thanks. No.
Bill?
Just want to say thanks to Alan and the staff for
putting together another great presentation for us, a lot of information, and welcome to the team, Josie, and just thank you.
I'd just like to thank Alan and staff. Appreciate it. Special shout out to Donna and the financials. Looking forward to